This episode is brought to you by Solid Erections Carpentry. Whether it's a door hanging, a deck building, a full renovation, they do it all in a timely and an efficient manner, working to a budget within your guidelines. They complement the look of your home in a matter of weeks. Then check out the team at Solid Erections Carpentry, who are based in Brisbane.
Don't just talk it, walk it.
Walk it only.
Don't just talk it, walk it. Don't just talk it, walk it.
Walk it only.
Don't just talk it, walk it.
Walk it only.
My man, Elijah, how you doing, brother?
I'm good, bro. How are you?
I'm good, mate. It's thank you for so much for hopping on today anyway.
Nah, no worries, man. I'm looking forward to the opportunity. It's cool. And as soon as I got your text and I've been looking at your Instagram, all the stories about your guys' work, and it's a good opportunity.
Sweet, man. It's funny how you just live in the area too.
So yes. Literally 200 meters away, literally.
Yeah. It was mad, right? Because obviously you're at Fev now, but I was speaking to Dan Fleming. I was like, you should try to get Elijah Taylor on. And then you messaged, but like we connected.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, he's already done it. We literally just got off the phone. And then it just.
Crazy, eh?
Yeah.
Synchronicity.
Yeah.
Crazy.
You ever found that though? Like I was listening to a lot of this guy called Bob Proctor. And he talks a lot about how like frequencies and how we like sometimes. You ever thought about someone?
And then they call straight
and
And they text you straight away. Yeah. It's crazy. Carl Jung, I talk about him in my raps quite a lot. And he always talking about synchronicity and collective subconscious. When someone texts you and you're thinking about them, or you're talking about someone and they ring you and they're like, oh, I was just thinking of you. Oh, I was just talking about you.
Yeah.
Like there's more to that than what we're told. So no, I always find that kind of stuff interesting. Makes you think.
I think as well, even like down to faith sometimes. Sometimes like when people are religious, sometimes we can't actively see things. But it's like that's what faith is sometimes believing in something that you physically can't hold or grab, but believing in something bigger than us.
Yeah, it's like love. You know what I mean? Love is a perfect example. You can't see love, but you can definitely feel it. You can, and the conscience as well. So it's deep topics, but we should always be talking about this kind of stuff because it's true.
100%. Well, man, this journey of yours is from obviously footy has taken you to some amazing places, but you found yourself over on this side of the woods now in the UK and England. But if you brought it all the way back, man, the average rugby, the average Kiwi normally goes down the All Blacks path, rugby union, chasing that dream. Obviously, you've gone down the league path. How did that work out?
So at St. Paul's College when I was about 16, I played rugby union when I was a child. My dad loved rugby union. Rugby union is the sport in New Zealand. League's tiny compared to it. And league's majority played in Auckland. And so I went to a college called St. Paul's in Auckland, in Grayland. And they played first 15 on Saturdays. And they played first 13 rugby league on Wednesday afternoons. And so I was playing both rugby on Saturdays and league on Wednesdays. Yeah. And the Warriors picked me up. They told me to come training after a game on Wednesday. So that's how I ended up at the Warriors. I landed in the system and I just went up through the ranks in the system at the time. But I was with Auckland under 16s as well that very same year. So I had to make a decision whether I should go Auckland Rugby Union or go to the Warriors. And then the under 20s competition in 2008 was starting. It was the premier competition and you got to train with first grade. You got to curtain raise every first grade game. You got to travel with the Warriors first grade team.
Wow.
Bro, I was so lucky. I look back at the opportunity. It was crazy the amount of stuff we got and the opportunity we had, like playing at Suncorp, playing at all the big stadiums in Australia. And it's the opportunity that couldn't turn down. It was just too good to be true.
Yeah, it's pretty unreal because, like you said, these opportunities to do these things, you're that on the cusp of first grade or like you can see the opportunity of first grade. That's the thing you chase?
Oh, definitely. It was, you got to train sometimes against them on Wednesdays. You get a position versus the first grade team.
Man.
But that was also, I always looked forward to that.
Yeah.
Because you knew Ivan was watching and you knew all the other coaches were watching too. You got to travel with the first grade team. You had the same hotel as the first grade team. You would always leave first because you're under 20s game. You would curtain raise. And after your game, we'd have to wait outside the changing room because first grade's inside getting ready for their game. it was just buzzy, like seeing, you know, Ruben, Steve Price, Simon Mannering and that, you know, how they go about their work.
Mm.
And I was only a young kid learning off them. So the opportunity that we had, bro, it was crazy.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty unreal because you had such a variety of skill sets there that at the Warriors back then. Is it anyone in particular, like going through the grades, not just at the Warriors, with someone you've just gone, I like that guy. I like the way he carries himself. I like the way he holds himself, not just as a player, but just as a generalized person.
It would definitely be Simon Mannering.
Yeah.
He was the captain at the Warriors when I was there. And he was at the top of his game. You know, Kiwis captain. He was the Warriors captain. Played 300 games. And I never heard him bag out someone. I never heard him complain. I never heard him just run roughshod over anyone. Mm. And that says a lot about the character of a person that's done it all.
Yeah, yeah.
Done it all. And I never heard him complain once, and he was our captain, and that's something I was just like, bro, this fella's the man. And I try to learn as much as I can because he was so professional as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And he played second row as well, so I was just trying to learn off him as much as I could. But now Simon Mannering, man, is probably one of the most, one of the Kiwi greats in the league. Yeah.
And do you think he kind of left on his own terms too, would you say? Or was it injuries that pulled him?
I think he had a great career, man. He'd done it all. I think probably the body at the end of the day, I don't really know, to be honest.
Mm.
But if he came over here, yeah, he could have played into his 37, 38.
Yeah, yeah.
But in the NRL, it's just so demanding physically. It's so hard physically, the trainings, the preseasons. Mm. And, you know, it probably takes its toll. I would have been retired. If I stayed in NRL, I'd be retired two years ago. Yeah, definitely, man.
What do you think it is? What do you think the difference? Obviously, in the preseasons are harder, but what is it about them? Is it because it's more drier weather, you're up more on the track, or resilience is more harder? Or
bit of everything, man, like what you just said. And the clubs, there's so much depth.
Yeah.
And they can't, they're keen to get rid of you as quick as they can to bring a young fella through to sign them up on a deal and try and push you out of the club. And, like, the squads are huge. So it's a top 30 squad now. And then you got the reserve grade squad, which are full of good players.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you got the under 20 squad, probably 20 people. Nah, probably 30 people there.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you got your best rookies. And so the club's always going to look after the young kids to try and sign them up early and try and push out the older fellas. Like, I remember I was 28 at the Tigers and I was actually old.
Like, that's crazy,
NRL,
hey?
That's crazy. In the NRL, if you're 28, you're old.
It's fucked.
You're old, and that's so true. But if you come over here, bro, you could play.
Yeah, yeah.
You hear stories of players playing until they're 37.
Steve Menzies.
It's just crazy. So if I stayed in the NRL, I'd definitely be retired. Cause, and again, the physicality of the training and the wrestling sessions, it's just so intense, man. And they go on for hours. And I don't miss that type of training because it's just, bro, injuries.
Mm.
Coach is always on you. It's a pressure environment.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of pressure. So, I'm enjoying it here because it's nice and chilled. Everyone's relaxed.
That's cool.
Everyone's relaxed, bro.
It always seems from the outside in, right, that like the UK forwards do pretty well in the NRL, but the backs don't seem to cut it. Maybe George Williams went over there, did well for the Raiders, but he wasn't cutting it as smooth as he was in the Super League. And I want to talk more a bit about your career, but while we're on the subject, how could you compare the two, the NRL to the Super League? I know you're saying one's way harder, but why is it that the forwards seem to cut the mustard over there, but maybe not the backs?
The forwards physically, if you're a Super League forward, you're well prepped for NRL because Super League's physical. I think it's more physical than NRL. The bash. It's a bit slower, but like dudes are strong over here. And so any Super League forward that goes to NRL, you'll be fine. But that's the outside backs. Tackle two carries out of the corner. You got to have some good footwork, or you got to be able to find your front, or you have to run off the back fence, get a quick play the ball, tackle two out of a corner. And decision making on the edge, whether you should jam or whether you should just hold, whether you should jam, like big decisions. I think that's probably what players don't get often exposed to over here, outside backs, is making decisions under pressure, like when to jam, when not to jam, and then tackle two carries out of the corner. You got to have some really good feet. You got to get a quick play of the ball. You got to win a penalty, win a six again, or find your front, or get a line break. Because if you're not doing that, if you're getting picked up and dragged back, you're not going to last there. But
I think David Meads, I did a podcast with David Meads when I originally started, and we were talking about this because he just come back from Catlands. He was at the Broncos, and he was saying the difference between the outside backs in the NRL to the outside backs in the Super League is they know, like that, like you say, when to jam and whatnot, but more about when to do those quick sleight of hands as a centers. You know, when someone's about to jam the center and they do that flick pass or the quick hands, the wingers in.
Yeah.
I think, you know, you've got the natural more. I don't know, even though you see it with the Polynesian backs, they just got that natural flair where, say, like, even look at Tim Laffey now for Salford, like, he's got those, that flick pass or that quick hands that it looks like it comes instantly to some of them. Where, and I don't know if that comes back to if you bring it all the way back to like touch footy or Oztag or, you know, TRL, where the quick hands come in again, or like your eyes up footy, instead of looking, we'll go to this play, to that play, and you're prepping for it, where it's like, oh, it's on.
Does
that make sense?
Yeah, it does. But honestly, probably even back further, probably in the backyard. Well, I notice over here, like me and my family, we're always inside because it's cold. It's always freezing outside. But when I grew up in New Zealand, bro, we were outside until the sun went down. When you're in Australia, you don't go inside until the sun goes down, bro. And the sun won't go down until about 8:30. And so we're outside playing footy, playing touch, playing rugby in the backyard. Like a lot of over here, like you probably don't have that opportunity because it's freezing or
most of the year.
You know, it's dark by 4 o'clock. It's pitch black. Where I think, you know, a lot of my skills came from the backyard with my brothers, like just mucking around, playing passes or playing one-on-one. So I think, you know, it goes back to that even third or the natural flair and that. I remember when I lived in Pakuranga in Auckland, every afternoon you'd walk to the local domain and there'd be a game of touch. And it'll be like adults, be kids, all in the same, like same game. It'll be pretty packed, at least 40 people there. And these are all the local neighbors just playing footy with each other because, you know, beautiful day. And I think that's where it all starts when you're a young fella and you play against, you know, men, adults, and you learn off them. And
so true, man.
Yeah.
It's funny you say that. When I was at Ipswich Jets, we had Ben and Shane Walker as our coaches, and they literally, like, our pre-season drills or even in-season drills were like a game of innings or Granny's Garden. So basically they would put cones out and you'd be playing in the touched goal area or a bit further maybe, and they'd put like cones, like circles, but like probably the size of this table, and they'd be like, that's Granny's plant pot. That's like, you know, the hose over there. You basically can't run through them. You've got to run around them. So you've got to be creative in how you think.
You've
got to, you know, 8 against 8 or 7v7.
That's crazy.
And this is simplifying the drills like that instead of overcomplicating them. And they, like that year, they won the we won the comp, and then they beat won the state champs against Newcastle in the final. But like their fundamentals were all drop unders, Granny's Garden games, innings. So like we play games where you'd be behind the post. And it'd be like an in-goal drop-up. You start with three defenders, and you'd have a whole team out there. And you get a tag on one, you add another defender. Get a tag on another, you add another defender.
Really?
It's all about, you know, shuffling defense, catching. You know, it's really interesting. You've really got to talk. But it's really simplified in how it worked.
Bro, I've never heard of that drill before. But it makes sense, though. It's just like, oh, that's a different way, a different approach.
Yeah, and well, look at Sam Walker now. He's with the Roosters halfback. And if you notice the way he plays. So I lived with them for the first 3 months when I moved to Australia. They didn't have a TV. But they're always in the back garden just playing. Like Sam was the oldest. It was Jackson and Tyson, and literally just like belt the shit out of each other. And he used to just, if it got too hard, I had to go in there and rough Sam up. And that's what it's like. But I loved that experience because, like you said, coming from this end of the woods, it was cold all the time. Or, you know, you're trying to change the dynamic. But how have you found it? Like, and like, I want to talk about everything and anything, but how have you found the transition to coming over here? Obviously, it's extended your career, as you said, but how have you found it overall, like with family? How are they fitting into the lifestyle over here?
Oh, I've loved it.
Yeah.
Like, my family want to stay here for good.
Nice.
When we went to Salford, everyone was welcoming. When we went to Fair, everyone was welcoming. Found a home here, found a church here. We
Audacious?
So
Audacious Church?
No, Evangelical Church. Okay. Chelsea.
Oh, right. Yeah. I've been going to that Audacious. It's in Salford, just on the cusp of Salford, I think. I think it's in Salford.
I think so.
It's on the main strip.
I'm not sure.
The guy said, I went there like 2 weeks ago and he's like, oh, there's a couple of good rugby guys who come here. I think he said Kevin Aguama goes there, but I don't know.
Yeah, it might have been when Kevin was still over here. Oh, he's back in Huddersfield now. Yeah, there might be. I go to the one in Charlton. It's good. Like, I like it over here. We can travel. Footy's easy. Training's easy. It's not. Bro, I'm telling you. Like, my first preseason at Salford, I was coming home at 1 o'clock. I was home. And my wife was like, are you home already? And I was like, babe, can you believe it? Because preseason's back in Australia under Madge, bro. We get home at 6:30, 5.
Madge is old school, isn't he? I heard he's proper like military.
Heavy. he's been a successful coach, man. Like, I was 31 when Madge came, so you know, my body wasn't too keen to like do the bash training, like contact, full contact. Because he's renowned for tough training. And I was doing this training. I was like, bro, I just can't keep this up. I can't keep doing this. But then you talk to the South boys, and a lot of them retired early from the wrestle sessions, and a lot of the boys at Tigers retired because it was all the contact sessions. But he's been a successful coach, man, and he'll definitely get another gig. But if I was 18 years old and I had Madge, I'll be like, yeah, man, this is awesome. This is cool. This is cool. I was 31, bro. I was like, bro.
Yeah, that's
I don't know if I can do this. Keep doing this.
You had you still have them, but I remember because I'm a West Tigers supporter, so I used to love when they were doing well, but you still got to be with them when they're doing it hard. But you, man, you got the natural talent. Like, you were a ball playing lock or second row or such, and I heard you running around in the halves here and there too. But like, you've always been gifted in that aspect. I feel like, you know, you weren't the type of guy to just go up one out and just run it hard or straight. You were more like looking at shoulders, you know, who you can put into holes and stuff. I think that's been like your, from what I've seen anyway.
Yeah, that was JT at the Tigers. So he got me at the Tigers, and he just let me ball play from the front. Jason Taylor, he was the coach of the Tigers. And he brought me to the Tigers and let me ball play. Luke Brooks and Mitchell Moses was at the back. We had Tedesco as well.
Freakish.
Crazy freakish. And those, they were so young, but they were so confident, man. I remember meeting them. They were just confident lads. I wasn't that confident, not as confident as them, but they would always set the bar. And they gave me a lot of confidence just playing, and things would come off. So I just kept doing it. And then Madge came, and then he wants his 13s kind of like another prop.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to get 100, 200 meters, bro. Like, physically, I'm not going to be able to do that. So different coaches have their different strengths of what they want their 13 to be, where I think a lot more coaches are going towards 13 ball players now instead of another prop. But the game's always changing. The game's getting quicker as well. So
it is, right?
Bro, so much quicker. I look at an NRL game now, I'm just like, holy heck.
Yeah,
that's crazy. That's so fast.
The average weight of a forward now, what would you say, like 105?
Probably 110.
Yeah.
No. Bro, 103 maybe. Like, I remember I was 98 back at the Tigers. I was 98 kgs. We had a small pack, but you don't really need a big pack anymore. You just need a mobile pack, a pack that can just defensively do the job. But if you've got skill and shape, and with the six again rule, man, like the days of seeing a big bopper, like all the forwards are going to look like back rowers. Like skinny, tall, lean. Eventually, like the game's game's going that way. Like I was playing prop sometimes, bro. I'm not a prop, but I could be mobile and I could get the ball around.
Yeah. Kind of thing.
So the game's definitely changing, and the body types are changing as well. So the days of big boppers, I think. Yeah, in the NRL. I think they're gonna.
It's still getting around in the Super League, I believe.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, you can get around easily. Yeah,
man. Like you said, you started at the Warriors and then you went over to Penrith and then West Tigers, right? But like, So Ivan was coach of the Warriors when you were there?
Yep.
And then Ivan was coach at Penrith?
Penrith, yeah.
So he did he decide like, when you come over or?
Yeah, so when he, at the end of, so we made the GF 2011 with Ivan. Ivan, very good coach, man. He told me after the, during the week after, and he was just like, I'm going to Penrith if you want to come. We'll make it happen. And I was like, yeah, cool. Because I was a young kid and I had a really good relationship with Ivan. And then the Warriors signed Todd Lowry, I think, from the Storm.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then the new coach, Matt Elliott, came in and he said, oh, Todd will be starting. You'll be on the bench or you'll be playing reserves. And I was just like, oh, cool. And then that's when that's kind of the reason why I signed with Penrith pretty quick. So that's how that unfolded. But I just remember at Penrith, man, like the team that's playing now, they were all the under-16s, they were SG Ball, Harold Matz, they all came through the system. It's crazy. It's a nursery out there. Gus Gould has a lot to do with that and the system that he's implemented. But it's just thousands of kids at Penrith.
You see that even like I think it was this year, just or last season, they won like NRL reserve grade. SJ 20s. Ball, 20s, yeah. all of them, yeah, like of them. Every yeah. grade they won, like what, yeah, crazy. And like you just said then earlier about like 28-year-old or whatever, but like that conveyor belt of players, like I think they were already losing Crichton coming
100%,
up. Yeah. Lose it. They lost Kikau, Api Korosau. Like they're losing them, but they're just filtering.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
And, but if you, yeah, go back to yourself, sorry. I'm
no,
just talking
no, about it was just, no, no, and I just can't see the machine stopping because – it's just the conveyor belt of players. And that's why in NRL, if you're 27, 28, you're old, man, because there's SG Ball players they want to sign and put them in first grade. Or there's under-20s players they want to sign and put them in first grade. And,
yeah.
And if they're local products, they can sign them for cheaper, obviously. So the older players will be shown the door pretty quick.
True.
Where over here, I feel like there's a lot more loyalty from clubs. Mm. Like you look at James Roby. And,
St. Helens,
you know, they kind of look after the older players, like But if that was an NRL, bro, like I remember I went to Tigers, and they were trying to get rid of Robbie Farah.
Yeah,
bro, and he was playing Origin at the time.
That's right.
And he was, I think he was captain Origin, and they were trying to get rid of him. And I was just like, what's going on here? And I think he was 28, 29, legend of the club.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
What do you think the vibe is, though, at the Tigers? It seems to have this, like, issue there where, I don't know if it's the board or whatnot, but, like, common sense was coming. You'd be like, you'd keep him, regardless of his age, regardless of where you think he's at, or financially, you try and make a way of holding on to these people. Because
this is where player-managers come into the game. So player-managers, obviously, they want the best for their players.
Mm.
And I know Robbie was on a lot of money, and there were some players there. I'm not going to name who, but they kind of wanted him out, so...
Oh, true.
They could get his money kind of thing. And like this is the NRL, bro. But this happened like 2016. This is a while back. I just couldn't believe it, man. I couldn't believe it. And they put Robbie Farah in reserve grade.
That's right, yeah.
And he was playing Origin and then he went back to reserve grade. And I was just like, bro, what's going on? What's going on here? But it's just the power of player managers, how much power they have in the game. They have so much power, man. Like they could wheel and deal. Bring a big name player to my club,
yeah,
and then you can sign some of my younger fellas, bring them over, extend their contracts. And the thing that gets me, those player managers, they have coaches as well.
That's right, yeah.
So you can't tell me they're not saying, "Oh, sign this fella, like, make him an upgrade in his contract, but more cash."
Yeah, yeah.
You can't tell me that's not going on behind
100%. The scenes. It is.
And then I look at like Origin teams or representative teams. Well, you know, if you're in a, just say you're the coach of international team and you got the same manager as a player that's got a clause in his contract that he gets upgraded if he's selected in the international team. Like, bro, you can't tell me there's no dodgy deals going on in the background, man.
100%, man. You've been there, you've seen it with the players around you, and you know deep down what happens. And players talk too, eh?
Oh, bro. 100%. Locker room, man. Like if there was some mics in the locker room, man. Oh, man. But yeah, you hear the stories and you hear all the stories that go on, and you know, a lot of things you can't really say on here or you get in trouble. but just some of the things that go on behind the scenes.
When did you have your best times, would you say, at in the NRL? Where were your best times and where were your toughest times?
Well, definitely the Warriors. My first year at the Warriors, we made a grand final. We were playing really good. Everything was coming off. It felt so easy. And back then, you don't feel pressure when you're a young kid. Because, you're a rookie, so no one's expecting much of you. Like, if you make a few mistakes, yeah, cool. I remember we went to the grand final first year, and I thought it was always going to happen because it was kind of easy. Definitely wasn't to be. I've never been back. Hardest time will be at the Tigers under Mash. Just the way we trained, full contact. We're always doing full contact training. Mouth guard, run hard. Run hard. If you don't run hard, you go run again.
Really?
Oh, bro.
Is he a screamer or is like, would he just have an expectation?
Nah, he'll just give you a look. All the Lee Moss will know that. He'll bend the neck and there'll be a vein over there. Tongue comes out. shout out to Mitch. He's passionate about the sport, bro. He loves the game. He's been successful over here, Wigan, successful at Selfs. He's done a lot for the game, man. But yeah, he's pretty intense, bro. You do it in the at halftime, you just don't know what he's gonna say. he's just spraying. I look back now, it's funny, but at the time I was just like, bro, this is too much for me.
Do you think the youngsters now don't deal with that hard, like that tough love anymore? It's a different dynamic how you go to these youngsters coming through?
Culture's definitely changed, like crazy. Just the respect and just the respect element. Like, you had to earn your stripes back in the days. You don't have to do that anymore. Like the days of earning your stripes and getting your first grade jersey, I think that's gone, kind of thing. You play a couple good games for your high school and you sign a first grade contract.
Yeah.
I can't remember it being that easy, bro. I can't remember.
Not at all. I was never fortunate to be your level, but man, I was praying to God and just trying to get a deal.
Just a shot, just something, eh? Just a shot.
Shot?
Yeah, man. And back to the respect thing, I remember a young kid at the Tigers. He was going at Benji. And I was just like, bro, what the?
Someone grab him by the scruff.
Who are you? He's a senior player. He's senior leader. When I first got to Tigers and, some boys were knifing Robbie Farah and just like, bro.
Something's not right, eh?
Man, it's just the culture we're in now.
Is that dude still in the game? The one who was spraying Benji?
Yeah. Oh, Yeah, he is. I'm not going to name names, but I just remember thinking, bro, you young fella, he's an icon of the sport, bro. He changed the game.
That was the reason why I supported West Tigers when I was younger.
Oh, 100%.
I'd watch it on TV and I'd be like, Benji, gosh. 100%. And then I was just chasing the tail of watching him all the time.
The same with me as well, man. Inspired a generation, especially, he's Māori and I'm New Zealander and you see that and you're like, man, if he can do it, he paved the way. Some of the young fellas today is just like, get a free ride in. I just can't remember it being that easy. Not for me.
Yeah. Going back as well to earlier talking about how the Super League the NRL as such is extremely hard, pre-seasons, every session's hard and the career doesn't go that long anymore. We were talking about it off air, but talking about steroids and supplements, enhancements, is it getting around as such in the rugby league career, in the Super League and the NRL?
Well, you hear locker room stories for sure. Especially over here, there's a few stories. I'm not going to name names, but when I came here, I felt the difference, tackling some players. I was just like, holy heck, I've never felt that kind of strength before. And a few other teams we played and you got players like middles playing 80 minutes doing very crazy in numbers, tackles, meters. And just thinking, bro, he's 30, you know, like 34, 35. How are you doing? Like, how? How is that physically possible? Like, you're doing 80 minutes and you're doing all those numbers, man. But, like, it's getting younger. So there's a few boys back in NRL that got done and they were like 19 years old. And apparently that's the time to do it. It's because it lasts with you for your whole career, like the whatever that.
Because your body's still high producing?
I wouldn't have a clue, but that's the chat is like the time to do it is when you're 17, 18, because you're gonna get you're still going to get the benefits, even if you do get snapped. But I think it's going to get more unless they do more testing. Over here, like the heart, I think I've been tested once.
Is that all? And how many years you've been here?
I've been here 2 years. But in NRL, bro, you're getting tested at least once a month. Mm. Everyone, at least. So you do an in-house test, then you ASADA test, and then you'll do a game day test.
There's no way.
There's no way you'll be able to get around that. And they do off-season tests as well. Like, you got to text where you're going.
Mm.
You got to let them know, oh, I'll be here.
But
over here, bro, I think it's a financial thing. Like, they can't afford to do the rigorous testing for a lot of players over here.
Just shows what kind of – well, I'm not – shows what strife the Super League is in over here if they can't afford to put these procedures in place.
Oh, that's what I think. I don't know, you're probably on the money, though. Yeah, I don't know if it's true.
But it's always been a money issue in Super League, I think, or in the Rugby League in the UK.
And it's so – because Rugby League is such – I'm biased, obviously. I think Rugby League's – watching a good game of Rugby League, bro, it's a good game to watch. I think it's entertaining. Obviously, I'm biased. But just the game over here, man, it's like, bro, it's not where it should be.
Yeah, it should
popularity
be.
Wise, I know soccer's the giant here, and they'll never change.
Mm.
Football's the giant here, but I think rugby league, man, like, I don't know what's happened to the promoting or the marketing over here in Super League, but
yeah,
man, it's got to be some work done or something. IMG. They're going to have to make some pretty big changes to get rugby league where it deserves to be, man.
It's just such a, like people watch the game and get lost in it and love it. And then you think, well, if you love watching that game so much, why isn't it heightened? Why isn't it on every game, on every channel? Why isn't like ads? Why haven't we got, you know, like not so much the origin or something around those lines with grand finals just booming, you know, you've got a week of full crowd days or fan days. And I don't know, it needs to be put on steroids a bit and juiced up a bit, you know what I mean?
It's England played the Exiles last year and there was a crowd of 3,000, 4,000 at Warrington, 3,000. Yeah. That's an international team, your international team.
Yeah.
And that's the crowd we got for it. It's a pretty worrying sign, man. Like, in 10 years' time, I don't know where the game's going to be over here. Like, more NRL players are not going to want to come here because you got the RLPA back in NRL that look after you. You get looked after off the field as well. Like, if you want to go study something, the NRL will help you. I just don't think it's attract, and the minimum wage in NRL has gone crazy high. So I don't think it's going to attract many NRL players over to the Super League much anymore. So
I remember when I was younger, I was in the reserves and there was, I had people coming over pretty young, like Ali Lauatiti came over. You know, when he was here, like he was probably coming premature of his
potential definitely.
In the NRL because of probably the money was definitely. Far greater back then, you know?
Far greater.
Yeah. Vinicola on the wing for the Bravo Bulls. You had Henry Paul. You had loads of people coming over early.
Yeah.
Obviously getting more money. Yeah. But then it's not going to happen now, like you said. Or you're going to get people who are probably not offered a contract over there. Well, this is a youngster maybe or something.
Definitely.
Game time. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what this IMG does. To be fair, I probably need to do more research into it all.
It's just disappointing with the game. You know how good it is. Obviously, we're biased, but it deserves more, man. Like, it deserves the proper pedestal, like TV. Like, every game should be on TV. Like,
mm.
It's Yeah, I could go on for ages.
You're passionate, brother. That's
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
Maybe we need someone who's got some fresh eyes, though, in the top end. Like, you know, we got these old fellas, you know, old school mentalities trying to play the game of chess, like how we should do things. Get some youngsters in there with a bit of free-flowing mindsets and going, hey, we should create this, you know, we should do that. And
it's crazy. I remember at Salford, like, last year, at the start of the season, like, my mum, New Zealand, she was like, oh, when's your games on? How many games you got on TV? And then I was like, oh, we've got one game on TV.
Mm.
One game. And we're a professional elite competition. And we had one game on TV. It's just, oh, bro, I could go on forever. Like, even watching a YouTube highlight of a game you missed, and just watching the YouTube highlights, 3 minutes, there's no commentary, there's no work done, there's no editing. Mm. It's just quiet, there's no crowd, there's no...
Check the NRL, though.
Yeah, check the NRL. On YouTube,
it's up, bang.
And then you got like post-match press conferences, you got reactions, you got players' reactions. But over here, bro, there's none of that. And I think that's so easy to do. Like, do a post-match press conference, everyone ask some questions, make it look formal. Like, they can't be hard to do, man.
You know as well, like, digital creators are now coming in big, like everything becoming very YouTube or Instagram, social media.
100%.
Get some of these young fellas from universities who have just come out on the cusp, because their creative mindset is far better than these old school dudes. Chuck them in there, let them have a crack, and I bet you that the content, the reels, the player profiles will be far bigger.
Oh, man. Like, yeah, just constant reels, constant, get the algorithm working, man. Like, yeah, get some young fellas from uni. Just pump out content for the sport, like player profiles, player bios, you know, just constant chats. And I remember, like, the NRL, the boss would come to the clubs every year in the preseason and just ask, well, what can I do better?
Mm.
How can the game be better? Todd Greenberg, I think he did that. And the senior players just used to give it to him, like, oh, this is all shit. Why did he get off this? Where did he...
Mm.
But at least he made the effort to come in front of the playing group.
100%.
And just thrash it out and talk over things. Because, it got pretty heavy in those meetings. Mm. I was just like, whoa, this is cool. But, bro, at least he had the – like, he came in with a slideshow and he's like, this is where I see the game in 5 years' time. This is where I see the numbers. You know, I need you as players to pump out content on your socials. I need you to play. Bro, I don't know who the Super League CEO is, like, they never came to Salford. I wouldn't have a clue who they are. I don't know their plan, how they see the game. Like, something that simple. They could make a time. They could come and see the players.
Mm.
But it's just, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just like,
maybe we should send this podcast to them and they'll listen.
Well, surely, bro. Like, it makes sense. If you want players to buy into your game, go meet them. Go have a coffee with them. Go thrash it out. Like,
great relationships with them.
Right, it just makes too much sense. It makes too much sense to do that. Like,
true.
It's just like crazy.
How are you finding it now? Obviously, not how you find it as such. Don't really know if you want to talk about it as such, but like, it was a bit of a tough time as such with your career with financial side, actually.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Do you want to kind of talk about
it? Yeah, sweet. And that was around the same time when training was hard with Madge. So I had the courts going on in the background. Mm. On my mind mentally was the hardest. Mm. And then I had to go to training and train under Madge, like, with contact, physical, full contact. Mm. So that probably was the toughest time of my career. And the court process, how it dragged out, the betrayal from my former manager. Mentally was definitely the toughest, because everything you got taught to believe,
because
he was a bit of a sports psych as well.
Oh, okay.
So he used to, like, always challenge me to, like, mentally, are you ready for this? Like, going into games or, like, because that's what he first did. He was a sports psychologist. And pretty much everything he said not to do, he was doing, kind of thing. So that kind of, like, it made me think of the game. Just like, bro, what was I listening to for the last 7 years, you know?
Made you start questioning your whole, like,
everything. I was just like, bro, I've learned so much. And a lot of it was pretty good stuff, but for him to not do it himself and completely opposite,
Yeah, well.
Like, I remember he was doing a course, me and him were doing a course on corruption in sport.
This dude's...
Bro, I swear. And I remember thinking, like, in hindsight, obviously I'm thinking from hindsight, I was just like, bro, like, what the heck?
Yeah, yeah.
And it makes you look at people a bit different now. Like, it's hard to trust people because if you met him, you'd never think he'd do something like this. Just nice bloke, gentle, kind, well-spoken. But man. Yeah.
Yeah, and, yeah, wow.
And then... Like, he always just tell me, you know, be mentally tough, you know, for your challenges and that. And I was like, yeah, yeah, sweet. And then, like, at court, like, he was going to his lawyers, oh, mentally, I can't make it to court. Like, I'm struggling mentally. And I was just like, shit, bro, everything man. He told me of being mentally tough was just like, eh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That kind of hurt the most, bro, because, you know, I gave a lot of time, made a lot of time with him. And just, yeah, everything he taught me was kind of like he was going against everything.
So basically, explain it, like, so he was dealing with your financial side, was he? Or
yeah, so I met him when I was 17, young kid at the Warriors, and he was doing sports psych sessions with the Warriors as like a team group thing. And then I got to know him more, and then he became an accredited agent. And then I signed up for him as a manager. He got me the Penrith deal, went to Penrith. And I was on pretty much nothing at the Warriors. Penrith was my first, like, proper deal.
Mm.
And financially, like, he was in a good position. His wife was a real estate agent. I met her. Her name's Wendy. And I just thought, you know, this guy could help me save. He could help me make some good decisions. Because there's no one in my family I could turn to in terms of financial. There's no one of financial advice.
Advice, or yeah, yeah.
Anything. And I'm from, you know, humble beginnings in that. So I thought, okay, I'll let him have access to my bank accounts to help me make good decisions financially. And that's how we got access to my accounts, which in hindsight was probably the worst thing I've ever done.
It's tough though, hey, when you put so much trust in someone and you've got, it seems like a deeper connection with him because he was like a mentor, like you might even call him family at one stage. You
yeah,
know?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely family, 100%. Like, he was there when my dad passed away. My dad was my best friend. And yeah, he kind of become their father figure I'd always turn to. Like, I'd listen to him more than anyone in my family kind of thing because my family hadn't, you know, played sport at a high level. They hadn't... yeah, had that experience in sporting circles. So I was kind of like trusting him that because he's from an Olympic background. He had worked with Olympians and that. So I just thought it was a no-brainer.
Wow. And then it all came out then, obviously. And that was at the West Tigers then that it all came out? Or
yeah, so in the West Tigers, I found out 2016. And it took 3 years to finally just to get to court. And that's a long time. Like, you find out how much is missing from your account. And then 3 years later, because he kept delaying, saying mentally, you know, I'm struggling mentally, I can't get to court, even though the courthouse is 200 metres from his house in Christchurch. Wow. Just making up all these excuses. And our court case got delayed like twice. And so, yeah, 3 years it got to court, finally, and he doesn't show up. And before, he declares bankruptcy. And then game over. Yeah, that's game over, bro. It was definitely a learning curve. I learned a lot from it. Mentally was the biggest side of it. Yeah, so other than that, bro, it's all right.
Like, you're a bigger man than most to sit here. A lot of people, you know, there's a lot of anger towards that. And how do you, you know, how do you relieve that anger? How do you... Because it could have been, like, it's not just you then, though, it's your family that he's disrespecting too. You know, he's taking advantage of right off your table as such.
It's, bro, honestly, it's more the trust that just got lost, eh? That hurts the most, bro. Like, I suppose there's a bit of anger there, but it's more just like, oh, it's weird. Like, surely, how does he sleep at night? Like,
that's so true.
The conscience, bro. Like, the conscience don't lie. It just made me, like, not trust people to the end of the day. But I never got to the point where I was like, I'm going to kill this person. Mm. I'm not going to. I never got to that point. No way. A lot of my teammates said, bro.
Got a number.
Bro, yeah. A lot of my teammates said that, bro. A lot of my teammates said, bro, if I were you, I would. I was like, nah, man. I can't do that.
Just shows your personality, shows your character,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, that's what I suppose. But yeah, a lot of people I tell and they're just like, bro, my blood's boiling just listening to the stories. And yeah, well, like if I did something, I'd get in trouble again. Yeah, why would I do that? So.
Well, man, you're a stronger man than most and glad that you can be here today and talk about it, brother, because it's powerful, man. And appreciate that. And then I suppose then that kind of shows your character as a person because it's a few things you've done in your life. You're a pilot.
Yeah.
Obviously you're into music. You're doing music as well now for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
So have you always been someone who's always optimistic, always wanted to try new things or put yourself out there?
No, I've always been a thinker. Like I've always been, it's probably, I don't know if it's a good thing. Because I can hardly sleep sometimes just thinking of ideas, thinking of things, thinking of if I hear a new beat, I'll probably stay up not nearly until like 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock just writing and I can't stop writing or I've got this idea. And I've always been like this since I was a young kid. I don't know what I was. I don't think it's a good thing because, bro, I can barely sleep sometimes. But with the music stuff, so I never wanted it to get out because I was a bit too shy, like, nah. And it wasn't until I met Dan Sargentson at Salford and he was like, nah, just put it out, bro. Who cares? Just put it out. And then I was like, oh, bro, I don't know. And he's like, who cares, bro? Just put it out. And then I was like, oh, yeah, sweet. That's all then. But, it was the pilot thing, it was just pressure because I needed something because I didn't have anything for my family if I retired from footy. That was the whole reason why I did my pilot license because I had nothing to fall back on after footy. And I played footy for 8 years, 9 years, and I nothing else. And so my wife's uncle is Uncle Sean. He's a pilot in the Cook Islands, and he said he would help me study in that. And so I just cracked into it like pretty intensely because time was running out.
Yeah.
And I had heaps of responsibilities. And yeah, that's why I pretty much did it. Yeah.
Well, it's a pretty good pullback, brother.
Yeah, well, I hope so. If everything works out.
Well, you got other things on the horizon now, but I would like to ask you as well, man. You know, people talk about mental health, people talk about stress, depression, anxiety. At times, you know, just from listening from back here, it would have been felt like a foot stepped on your throat or stuff, like, you know, that pressure of, well, footy's coming up, I've had this massive situation with the agent and now I better have a fallback, I've got a family, or maybe I'm just creating this in the situation, but like there seems like a lot of stress factors. What got you through this?
Probably my family. Yeah, probably my family. Just knowing that, bro, I've got to put food on the table, bro. Like, footy's not going to be here all the time.
Yeah.
And I think study was a good thing to get away from the training that we were doing at Tigers. Like, mentally, you know, training and footy was really hard, training. And then the court case as well in the background.
Yeah, man.
Away. And doing study, something totally different, learning something totally new. It was really hard doing piloting, but it was kind of the getaway I needed from footy. And so whenever I studied, like, I kind of ripped into it because I was like, yeah, this is cool. I'm learning something new. Because when you're 31 and you've been playing footy for 8 years, you, especially rugby league, like, you can't learn much. Like, rugby league is a sport of just constant effort on effort on effort. Like, there's not many more skills you could kind of learn in a game like that. Where if it was basketball, you can learn on your fadeaway, you can learn on your jump shot, you can work on that. But, like, rugby league, bro, is just run hard, tackle hard kind of thing. So learning something totally new, like, it was kind of exciting a bit. And it gave me a break from, you know, the court case and sport as well.
Cool, man. It's awesome. It's good to see the way you think as well. I like the fact that you said earlier, you know, you're a deep thinker, because deep thinkers are normally the most creative people. Like, they think outside the box. And when you said earlier, you know, I struggled to sleep, I remember when I started the podcast and all, when I started the lifestyle business, I would lie abed at night and this idea would pop in my head. And I'll be like, I've got to write it down.
I'm going to forget it.
So 100%. I'm just going to lie there with this notepad just next to my bed.
Bro, 100%.
Just be like this. Bang. And then I'll be, oh, no, it's coming again. Like,
wow.
And it's powerful, man.
100%.
I think it's a blessing, you know.
You reckon?
I think it's a blessing, yeah. Like, it tells me that we're more than their bodies. We're like physical attributes, but I feel like there's far more instilled in us. I think that we're designed for, when your footy career ends, man, the sky is the limit where you're going to go. Like, what a creative thing to have in your mind that you can go for. This thing, look at Elon Musk. I know he wouldn't want to go to that extent, but that dude doesn't stop thinking.
Yeah, true.
It's just actioning it.
Just the sleep part of it, bro. Because honestly, if I get an idea I know I have to write it down. I'm going to forget it.
Mm.
And so I got my phone, and then as soon as I write it down, I just got to keep going because I'm in the moment. I got to tell my wife, like, go and hide my phone because.
Yeah, I feel you.
Bro, because I'll be up all night on the phone and just keep writing down notes, and just ideas. And sometimes when I wake up in the morning, I had a dream. I was like there was a music in my dream of thing. And then I was, write that down. What did I see in my dream? Like, bro, I could carry on forever on this one.
Do you think, like, obviously your music, rap, or, you know, hip hop, and like I've come across a lot of Maoris and Islanders and been to Rotorua, and man, you're all natural singers as well, though. Like, as soon as they have a beer in their hand, they bloody got the guitar out and they're jamming songs.
Yeah, man. I've never been a singer and I've never known how to play the guitar, but bro, I know so many. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah,
give them a beer, bro. Give them a guitar.
Mm. Do you know who Sammy J is? He's like a Kiwi singer. I think he's born in New Zealand, but then he moved to Australia. But he was in Brisbane a lot. His name's Sammy Johnson. And he plays, I remember going introduced to some of his music by some of the Kiwis. And I went to his concert and I looked around the room. I was like, the only white dude there, listen. But he's unreal, man. He's unreal. Like,
yeah, I got to get onto him.
Yeah. And then you got other people like, you know, 660 and stuff like that. They're unreal.
Yeah. I remember some people at school, like Benji, bro. Benji is one of those Maoris.
Mm.
Bro, he's good at everything. Like, bro, he can play footy, play touch. He can sing. Bro, he can play the guitar.
Yeah, well.
Like, and there was like just heaps of those kind of people at my school, Maoris. They were just so talented, bro. Like, I remember Cody Ray, like, just heaps of Maoris coming through different schools and all talented. I don't know where that comes from.
Yeah, but yeah. Must be in the, maybe all the church back in the day, singing at church.
I don't know, all the drink ups on Friday night, and then in the garage, Skyline garage.
Well, even the intro to my song is sang by a Polynesian. Guy used to just sing locally in my area in Brisbane.
Really?
I used to go listen to him all the time. Ooh. Zai Neslove and Zai Latu. And basically it was COVID time and they were just singing off the balcony because they couldn't go to pubs or anything. So he used to go on his balcony and I'd walk my dog and I seen him performing on his balcony. It was him.
Really?
Russ Walker, you know, Stan Walker's brother.
Yo.
He was there, yeah, and they were all singing and it was just like $10 and you could just sit in the street and they'd give you a beer if you wanted to and just sit there and listen to him on a Sunday afternoon.
Crazy.
And then after he invited us in the house and I got to know them all.
Man.
Then they came over and I was like, this is my idea. I want to do this in COVID. And then he was like, yeah, I'll play you an intro. I'll get it sorted.
Really?
One of the best dudes, man.
The man. Nah, that's cool, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's mad.
Well, wow. Let's talk a little bit about your music. So where does it all come from? Obviously, you know, the rhymes, the lyrics that you put in there, what's it connected to?
It would either be stories from my childhood. I redo is from the world.
Mm.
all these stories about footy or from footy or what I've seen through my footy days. I'll never do a song where it's about going to the clubs or drinking or treating women like crap.
Good.
Because, bro, the market's just flooded with that kind of filth, bro. And it's just, it's not encouraging. It's not edifying. It's not, it does no good in the long run for anyone. So if I can make someone Google something of what I said in a bar or on a track, just make them think about or provoke a thought. I was like, bro, what was he saying there? If I can do that, I'm happy. I've done my job. That's what I want. If I can get someone on Google just thinking, what was he saying about that? And I'll be happy with that. I'm content with that. That's all I really want.
I heard one on Instagram. Something about me and Dan Sargeston were talking about.
Bro, you just got to get him on this podcast, man, because, bro, he's such a deep thinker.
Yeah, he is.
And like, me and him connect because I'm a deep thinker as well. And we could talk for ages just about different topics and different subjects. I don't know. I reckon he'll come back and play.
You reckon?
Yeah, I reckon.
At the moment, he's in a space where he's just wanting to give back.
Yeah. Nah, bro, I've always got so much time for Sarge, and he's probably one of the probably three people in footy that talk like that or have that worldview. Everyone else is
robots.
No one else would think like how Sarge will think.
The thing you talk about, so I caught up with Sarge like 2 weeks ago. He invited me to do some yoga with him. I went down and caught up with him. And I only met him through a friend anyway, like just told us to connect. And he was talking about stuff and he was saying about, from the outside in, people were kind of saying, oh, he's left due to mental health. And I was like, nah, man, the more I get to know him, he's not due to mental health. He's just checked out. He's mentally checked out of the cycle. And I think he knows it's more to him than what people are saying. Yeah, and, he wears his heart on his sleeve, like the way he talks, the way he
definitely.
Says.
Yeah, definitely.
People are not used to that. He's walked into, without sounding like a spiritual tree hugger, it's like, I feel like there's different realms, right?
Yeah.
But a lot of people are stuck in this little box realm.
100.
And he's just that side of it, and he's talking
outside the box.
He's just raw. He's speaking like he's taking a layer off himself and speaking in a different way. And people think he's crazy or something.
He's weird.
No disrespect to that, Sarge, but it's like, no, man. It's just you need to walk. You've been stuck in this route for too long. You need to get yourself off this path and check another.
100%. Bro, a lot of people call me a space cadet through my whole career. They're like, fuck, he's a space cadet. Yeah. He's always on his headphones. He's always on his phone.
I like it.
He's always listening to music. And bro, I don't even care if they called me that. But you ask any player that I played with, I was always had my headphones on my own, in my own buzz. At the airports, I'll sit by myself.
True.
All the time. I'll just be on my own kind of world thing. And I've always been like that. I don't care. I don't care what they think.
That's powerful, man. I think too many people do think about care what people
think. Definitely, bro. If someone's got the latest shoes, I need those latest shoes. Or someone's got the latest hoodie, I want their latest hoodie. I gotta go get a car that's better than his car. It's just like, bro, what are we?
Just to perceive, that's one thing I've noticed since coming back to the UK. Everyone has a flash car, but then they're living in a high debt. They got a shit house, and you're like, what are you trying to show me? Are you showing me you got a flash car, but
bro, that's
you're
the world.
Getting by.
And that's the world we live in, man. That's the world we live in.
What do you think our purpose is here?
To love one another, to forgive one another. To love God with all our heart, mind, soul, and strength, bro. That's what I think we're here to do.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. So, when you just see people, the system we're in, it's all about, buy this latest thing, buy this, consume this, consume that. You need this latest iPhone. You need this latest gadget. You need this. To get this, then you'll be happy. Get it, and then you're after something else. But when you finally break away from that, bro, it's just life's more to that than just buying clothes or
You know what's under that answer, I believe, when they market it like that? It says you're a loser. So buy this, this will make you happy. Really what it's really saying is the opposite. You're a loser.
Actual.
This guy, Martin Bone was talking about it, and I didn't realize it. Not in a way I shouldn't be so harsh and saying you're a loser, but it's more about like you're chasing these, you know, materialistic things to feel like that's going to bring you happiness. Yeah. Happiness is just like, you know, taking your dog for a walk or spending quality time with a good friend, going to get a coffee. And then as I've got older, I think I've realized that like just I really struggle with surface level talk.
Yeah, same. I've always have as well. Always. You know, small chat, I've never been good at it. Mm. If we're going to talk, bro, we've got to talk about something worth talking about. Or it's just, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
If you're talking about Love Island around me, bro, I'm just like,
see ya.
I'm not having this, you know, I'm not going to be in this conversation. But I've always been like that kind of thing. Mm. But, you know, there's people out there that's all they do all day is talk about Love Island, what happened in the latest episode. And it's just like, bro, like, you know,
you have to wonder,
bro. But, you know, that's the society that we're in now, man.
Mm. And even going down to, like, I just feel like we're going away from what was once thing that was the biggest joy is a connection, a community we create. I think that we're becoming more lonely.
That's it.
After COVID, for instance, everyone's doing more Uber Eats or delivered to the house. Same. We don't even connect. You know, you don't bump into someone in the street anymore. Years ago, you would know your neighbor's name. You know, we were having this conversation with a friend of mine that his boiler stopped working in his house. Yeah. And his dad was like, he rang his dad and he's like, oh, dad, my boiler stopped working. And he's not getting you till 3 more days. He's like, why don't you just knock your neighbors door and have a shower next door? And he's like, I don't even know who my neighbor is. He's like, what? His dad's like 50, 60. Yeah, he's like, I know every person's name in my street. If I needed milk, I would just knock so-and-so's door and get a carton of milk and have a cup of tea then. You know, that sense of community. We're losing that, Elijah.
Yeah, definitely. Bro. Definitely. Even, it's so true when you, I haven't thought about it that way. Even I've noticed in the teams over here, the rugby league teams, they're a lot more tight-knit community than they know the kids' names. They know their people's names. And I think social media has done this. Like social media has made us less social.
Mm.
Definitely made us less social and more about trying to impress other people kind of thing, and that your life pretty much trying to impress people.
Yeah, yeah.
And keep impressing people.
So true.
I haven't actually thought about that. That's so true, though. Like, it's so true.
Growing up, if you reflect your childhood to the new kids on the block's childhood, like, I remember every night, you know, we would get told, get home before the floodlights. We'd be stinking in the rain.
Yeah, yeah.
But we'd be playing rugby, we'd be shouting Jonah along with Jonah.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was us playing, like, you know, or when Benji or Sonny Bill, when, you know, Sonny Bill fending or offload. And then, like, you know, the only time I see kids playing rugby now is like when I went home to Wales last was like after a Six Nations game.
Yeah.
But normally every night was like a little garden field in the middle of the street.
Always.
It's community, man. Yeah, we don't even know it.
100%. I went to a funeral at a marae back in New Zealand, my last time I was there. And usually, bro, there's a game of touch. Guaranteed there's a game of touch. Or guaranteed there's a game of rugby going on. All the kids. Nah, man, like they're all on their phones, just like not even know who their cousin is. He just drove up from freaking Wellington. Don't know who he is. I'm just going to sit on my phone.
Yeah, yeah.
Or play on my iPad. Like, you know, before then, when we were young kids, bro, everybody be trying to do, you know, the latest step or check out my step or check out, oh, hit you. Yeah, run it straight then. Yeah, come on then. Like rivalries with your cousins. And, you know, their cousin's team versus our team. Come on, come on then. That's gone, bro. I don't think it's coming back.
Well, the more things social media becomes bigger, obviously it's going to be harder. But I think that's one thing I've always had a deep connection with, like the Kiwis and the culture. Because when I went to Australia, I went 19 on my own.
No one with me.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
And when I got this start, the people who looked after me straight away were like this Kiwi family. Yeah. Just tucked me in like I was, and they called me Neff all the time.
Yeah.
And all the men were in the garage drinking.
Yeah, yeah.
And all
yeah.
the aunties were cooking food.
Yeah.
And then I'd go, like, he's still one of my good mates, Slade King. I'd go over his auntie Shaz's house and they'd cook a hangy and stuff. And then,
bro, that's mad.
And that was one of the biggest things that made me feel at home. So,
yeah.
And then when I went to New Zealand for a holiday, for his wedding, actually.
Honestly, that's natural. Eh? That comes natural to a New Zealand family. Like, yeah. bro, give him a feed, give him a kai kai, make sure he's. That's. They weren't doing that trying to impress you. That's just how you do it, bro. Like, that's just what you do. Like, you know, you bring him in, bro, have a feed, boy.
Yeah.
You know, get a beer.
You know,
like, that's just the culture back home. And I hope we don't lose that. Yeah. Like, and that's. Carry on with your story, but that's
so
that would have been natural.
But I think, you know, it, like, I compare, just reflecting on the Welsh culture, like, I've my mum, man, if you come down, like, she won't leave you, you'll be having a full stomach when you leave.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
just like Sunday dinners, like, mum, bless her, like, she cooks like 6-7 Sunday dinners, and there's only her and dad at home now. But she drives to all my aunties and my nans, gives them a dinner, do you know, just that. And I think. From COVID, she emphasized it more because she knew they become less social. So she's really big on that. And I think that's instilled in us.
Yeah.
So the community is massive. But then I think that was a deep connection then to New Zealanders because of that. And then when I went there, I felt like the land itself, because it's greener. It was like Wales, maybe because of the rain.
True.
A lot of farm in there.
Yeah.
It was really interesting. I literally not long ago, have you been to Peak District? The Peak District?
Lake District?
It is the lake. And then you've got, what's the lake? This lake just is like up
north, eh?
Yeah, north.
Yeah.
It's a Peak District.
Oh, really? No, I haven't been there.
Not, it's about, it's literally about an hour away from here.
All right.
Bro, get yourself there.
All right.
If you like nature, land, take the family and go for a little walk.
Yeah,
get a coffee and take, it's beautiful there. I went there like 2 weeks ago.
All right, cool, bro. I'll
check it out.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Well, before we go on to, I feel like I could talk for days now.
Bro, so could I. I could, yeah.
I've got training later. I think you got traded too.
Yeah,
you got a game this tomorrow?
Tomorrow night. Yeah.
Same. Who you got?
Batley.
Witness we got.
Yo.
Yeah. But do you wanna throw some bars or what?
Oh yeah, sweet. Yeah.
We'll check it on.
All right, brother.
Can you freestyle to this beat for me?
Yeah, bro. Yeah, sweet. All right. Turn up a bit.
I've been through league trials, I don't get no love. I'm not a gangster or a crip or blood. No cigs or drugs or redials, I don't snitch on plugs. Just D now when they switch on us. Try to flip more stuff to get this like a Klitschko glove. This fiscal dump's been rough, rusty Bristol's buds. For the dip and thought it kept going up, but it didn't like a crypto rug. I need to let go, cuz, and leave. I'm looking at CDG. Believe me, we should gap, cuz this ain't easy. I'm spitting facts, you won't see these freeze on J Black or Smack DVDs. This AI chat, GBT, cuz money makes you greedy, B. When I was back in the Kiwis team, on TV screams, either we need no mainstream media schemes. The CCP runs the BBC, and they could laugh, cuz I'm hearing them. I got bars that will bury him, prepare to win, I'm raring to start. Cuz when adrenaline sparks, it's dark when there's fear in the heart. I'm from the far north, but hard-partarian. Charging Ethereum, my bearings are in. I'm forced to take you out, baby, this is cesarean. And your answers are wearing thin, but I survived the fire, so it's part Targaryen. Carry on smearing them, the banner is missing. I'll handle the criticism, or well, the ambience hidden. I ran and spit in amateur, I passed full of written. They're mad at me rapping for family, I'm actually spitting. Was never game banging, though my Barrett is different. Apparently I'm being arrogant, that's Anthony Griffin. I'd understand if the camera is hidden, you listen. I catch you paying attention to my ambitions as a rider. My decisions in Kara was for my life prior. I've risen with desires, got my pilot's license. I can take you high, but the system advise ya, don't listen to Elijah. Got supplies on Fiverr, paid them a fiver. Subscribe my playing wage from Days at the Tigers. Wada Asada, they want another saga of drama and trying to get saliva for Donna Dombada. Cause Big Pharma is handing out prescriptions, giving kids puberty blockers for their transition. Split up families, so the dad's missing. Now she's trying to change gear into a man. That's a transmission. and they know that. Program the school kids, so make makeup drag. Blame those cats and dogs, cause they ain't no dads. Forget the vets, they wanna salute these rainbow flags. Ayo, they say I'm acting loud to a bad amount. You're a Karen now, why you bagging out dudes like a paramount? Too much rabbit hole foods, I'm just handing out truth. But they don't want red pills, they only want the blue. In a coupe playing the fool with a camera mount too. He's a Chatham mouth, probably ratting out you. I'm a scatter now, so this is Chatham House rules.
Oh man, that was unreal. That was really good, brother. I was just off the top as well. Just, well, that's good. Where does the, obviously you talk about, you know, getting these thoughts to bed, but obviously thinking about them, you know, subconsciously it's in your mind, or yeah, things, you know, you like to think outside of the box as such. And
I just always question why, like, why is it, why is this, why is that? My old man said, actually, just question everything. Like,
yeah.
And I think that leads you to critically think about things.
And
I think critical thinking's getting lost as well. Yeah. Like being able to sit down and, yeah, these are the facts here.
Yeah.
This is this. Make a decision, yeah, with the evidence you got. I think that's, people won't even, that's too much effort for some people. That's, whatever you say, yeah, I'll do it. Like,
so true, man.
Yeah. And especially going through, like, with my former manager, because I definitely wasn't doing it then. Like, in hindsight, there's a few things where my manager told me where I should have gone, what the, what's going on here? But I didn't, because I was just like, oh, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. You know? Do you feel like at stages in your career, you're just going through the motions at all? Like, you know, this is what everyone's doing, so I better do it.
Nah, I don't think I've.
You've always been pretty authentic to yourself.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's why, you know, a lot of players call me a space cadet, bro. I was just doing my own thing. But I hardly hang out with the boys, to be honest. Yeah. I hardly hang out with the boys. And I kind of regret it in a way because, you know, just going to pubs in there, like, you get to know the boys a bit better.
Do you not drink or anything?
No. And it wasn't until, like, my last year at the Tigers where I understood, like, the thing of a team being a team bonding. I never understood that until I was later in my career, because when I was young, bro, I was just focused on, like, playing good, everything. And then it wasn't until, like, later on where I realised, oh, bro, I'm not going to be here next year, so I might as well finally get to know you. And like, yeah, enjoy it a bit more. And that's something I should have did when I was young, just enjoy it a bit more.
Yeah.
Because I was always, like, focused.
Tunnel vision,
100. Like, if you're not helping me, bro, I'm not gonna.
I'm not gonna
talk to you, kind of thing. But yeah, I kind of regret that, because if I had my time ever again, I'll definitely spend more time with the lads.
No, I get you there. I get you there for sure. I think when I was younger, I just tried to. I think I got lost for a little bit. I had 3 knee reconstructions.
Did you? ACL.
ACLs on the same knee.
Back to back. Knee.
Yeah. And then the last one, yeah, patella was the last one. 2 hamstring grafts, patella. Have you done your ACL before?
I've done both of mine.
Both. Oh, different knees. Different knees. Hammies or patella?
Patella.
Game changer.
Bro. Sam McKendry, bro. The prop. Penrith fans will know him. Kiwi fans will know him. But the physios, they were like, oh, you know, we've got this new technology out. He did his ACL. You know, you can use a dead man's
graft.
It's from a dead man. Right, didn't work. 6 months, first game back, boom, gone. And then they were like, oh, for the next one, we'll use Achilles from a dead person, I think.
Yeah, well.
Did it, boom, gone. That's 2 years gone from his career. And then he finally got the patella graft. Bro, before his first ACL, he was at the top of his game, one of the best props in the game.
Yeah.
And then his final one got the patella graft, sweet.
All good, yeah.
So it's just... sometimes, like, patellas are proven to go good. Like, if it's someone ever comes to me and say they've done the ACL, I always tell them, bro, make sure you get a patella graft.
Yeah.
Nothing else, just get a patella graft.
100%. Do you know who did yours?
Yeah, Titchens. He's from New Zealand.
Titchens, I've heard of him.
Gordon Titchens' dad.
Okay.
So Gordon Titchens was the Sevens coach. His dad was a surgeon, like, pretty well-known surgeon in Auckland.
Okay.
And Yeah, I got my first ACL there, 2010. Bro, I was doing ladders.
Is that how it went?
Bro, can you imagine?
Going on that.
Can you imagine? After a preseason. So we started preseason November 5. We got absolutely flogged.
Mm.
Absolutely flogged. And then before our first trial, which was February, November, December, 3 months of getting flogged, I do my ACL, bro. And then I missed the whole year. It's just like, wow.
It's tough,
head noise, that.
Brother, head noise killing me. That was probably my deepest, my darkest days, where I did my first one at 18 or 17, then I did another one at 23, and then one at 25, and I was just like mentally done. It wasn't even, the feeling of going to the field was beautiful, but just the feeling of going back into that dark demon place of training again, rehab group, a lot of the time when you're open, you're seeing people coming, 100%.
and they go.
You give them the tap on the back, like, see you, like, you're the captain of rehab.
Bro. Oh, bro, I know the feeling, man. It can be a dark spot, man. Like, especially long 6 months. You need a good physio, like a good and a good trainer that's gonna bring the energy to the session. Because if you're gonna have a trainer that's down in the dumps and bringing no energy, right? Like, it's gonna transfer to the players for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
But I remember I was with Ruben. My first ACL. Rehab. I was a Ruben Wiki.
Okay.
Bro, he used to flog me every day. And I was a young fella, so I couldn't really say,
hey,
oh, got a carrot? Got a carrot? I couldn't really say, bro, do we have to do this one? And I was a young fella. I was like, yeah, I'll do it. Like, Ruben Wiki, bro, good lad. And I learned a lot off him as well. But if it wasn't for him, like, helping me through those sessions, because you'd see the boys having fun, like, play outside, bro, and you're on a rowing machine, just like looking at everyone, just like, bro, my life. Or you're on a grinder, just and then game days, you're just sitting on the bench, you know, you got your polo on, all the boys are having fun playing, and you're just like, wow.
You're not really in there, right? You're not there.
Yeah, you're just like, bro, what am I doing?
I didn't like the feeling of just the like when I was in, after the hospital surgery, they would just give me loads of tramadol.
Really?
And I would just be like, I remember that when I was younger, I took it and I just didn't like the way I felt off it. Really? I felt like a zombie.
Right.
And I stopped taking it then. I started just taking them. I got sent over some CBD oil.
Wow.
And I was just rubbing that and actually found myself recovering quicker.
Really?
My moods were just more in line. There's tramadol and endomes and all that stuff they throw out the players now. It's just...
Oh, bro. That's opposite. That got me hooked on tramadol.
Oh, like, yeah.
Oh, bro, bad.
That was my fear, I think.
Yeah, bad. Like, there was one time there, going to rehab, I was on tramadols, and it would just make all the noise go out. Like, and I would just sit there, and I was lying on the couch, and I was like, oh. Like, I don't know why, but this was like 2010.
Yeah.
I was 20. But it would just make all the noise go away.
Yeah.
Personally, and then I liked that feeling. I was just like, you know, I'm just by myself. I feel nice and cozy in that. But I was bad on them from surgery. So.
No, that it's a tough thing. And then just
by looking at all the medical studies on it now, bro, those things are the worst. Like, I wouldn't ever touch one now. Like, the amount of stuff that's in those and what it does to your body.
It's hard, hey. It's hard, and. Because you're just telling what a surgeon's telling you what to do. So you're just following suit.
100%. And you know, he's a surgeon. You're a footy player. He knows more.
Yeah.
You don't. So you're just like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
You say it's good. Yeah, sweet.
Well, I'm just coming back now from a groin issue. I've had that osteopubis. Have you ever had that?
Oh, I heard that.
It's not fun, man.
I heard that's all annoying ass.
I've been using this stuff. So it's CBD oil.
Yeah.
It's a palm. You just rub it on the affected area.
Really?
And it's been helping with the pain relief. And then we had, so they give us this, and it's obviously no THC in it.
Yeah.
So it's all good. And then, that stuff's got like tea tree smells to it. So it's all a lot of natural plant stuff.
Really? I might jump on it.
Check it out, man. They're great. Yeah. And they're a Welsh band, Welsh company, Gioi, I believe it is called, but he's a good dude. And then we had come through the other day, this Bloom in UK, which are mushroom powder.
Yeah.
All that stuff. There's all mushroom powder stuff. So I'd be putting that in my coffee, like lion's mane, wow, or turkey tail, or cordyceps.
Yo.
Just for brain power or
revive. I've heard stories of lion's mane.
Check it out if you ever want to try it.
I will.
Check it out.
Oh, yeah, check it out.
You've got plenty. They stocked this up the other day, so whatever you want. But
yeah, sweet.
It's, I think it's just the way to go forward, man. It's go that natural approach. You, like, you don't know what's all these other things are telling you to take. So.
100%. And we just, like, the more information there is out now, that's one thing good about the internet.
Yeah.
It's just, there's so much information out now. You can make decisions. And a lot of people are going natural alternatives because they see the effects of, you know, big pharma and all the drugs.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just a band-aid. It's not healing the problem. It's just slapping something on it. But, like, this is natural. And, yeah, the more information out there for people is the better. Definitely.
Yeah. Well, he told me something the other day which I found quite interesting. He said these big companies, you know, prescription companies, you know, they're doing enough to keep you alive.
Yeah.
But they're not fixing the problem. Right? Right. So what happens is, like, you might, for instance, have a longer life, but your quality of living is probably not that good. I'd rather have a shorter life. The quality of living is primo, you know?
Right. That's why I always, a lot of tracks I go in at Big Pharma, because it's just, there's money made off sick people. Oh. It's a business. Like, I never knew that when I was young. And I think when people realize that people are making billions of dollars off cancer, people are making billions of dollars off pharmaceutical drugs that are not necessarily healing, they're just prolonging something, and they're making good cash off it.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, well, that was the thing that made me wake up to a lot of things, just like, bro, they're like kind of making cash off people being sick. Like, it's a good thing, good business for them. It's, and when you go down that rabbit hole, it's just like, bro,
yeah,
what else are they doing? And another rabbit hole, the music industry and the private prison systems. Like,
talk about that.
So the private prison systems, obviously, government subsidies. Each inmate is more cash.
True.
Right? How do you get the inmates in? Or you put out junk music. You put out gangster music. You highlight gangster videos. Violent scenes on Netflix, like, flood the entertainment industry with death, killing, disrespecting police, bro. This is crazy. And obviously the teens hear that music, or the teens listen to that, and sure enough, they're in the private prison system, more cash. Like, it's just
smarty. It's where they
it's just corrupt. Like, bro, what the heck?
And the prisons and stuff like that. Like,
yeah,
it's more corrupt than what you think it is.
Yeah, it's like the more you go down the rabbit hole, the deeper it gets. And then the more you look for answers, the more questions you have. It's just Viacom and Vivendi, and that's how.
Is that what? Is that that way? What's that? Is that Illuminati?
I don't know. I've seen a lot of people doing it. It's what everyone does.
And I'm like, what's
it? I think it's satanic worshipping. Like, I think, you know, they worshipping Satan. And they brag about it too, in like a lot of interviews, a lot of celebrities, they say that out of their own mouths, kind of selling their soul and that.
Really?
Yeah, bro. Like a lot of celebrities now, they're not even hiding it anymore. You know, whenever I see that, it just reinforces my belief in scripture. You know, when Jesus was tempted by Satan, and Satan told him, bow your knee to me and I'll give you fame, fortune, I'll give you all these cities, I'll give you these kingdoms if you bow your knee to me. And Jesus obviously said no, but look at today. Bro, they've sold their soul. They're fame, they got fame, fortune, money, they got everything. And they're in a position of influence. Right? And that's, the more I see that kind of stuff, I'm just like, bro, it's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely crazy.
So true. My I was literally on the phone to my pastor this morning in Australia.
Oh yeah.
He's a good dude, really good guy. Kind of forget sometimes he's my pastor because I just talk to him like one of the boys as such, you know?
Yeah.
But we had a chat there earlier. We're just talking about, like, you know, that he wants me to kind of, not once, he would say, you know, I'd love one day you'd be up on stage talking. And I said, yeah, I should look into doing that more. I said, at the moment, I want to invest in this, but it doesn't mean I'm not carrying God when I do these things, you know.
Yeah, man.
But I think at one stage, because my background of family is not a religious family, I only started going to church like five, six years ago when I was walking past that church store in Australia, in Brisbane. And that I looked, I was like, a lot of injuries were happening. And then the church was there, and I was like, every Sunday I would have been hungover, and I was like, I need to go in there. Just this thing is, I was like, just go in there. And then I went in the back, and I just stood there in the back. I listened, but his name's Russell Harper. He wasn't necessarily that day talking about God, but he was talking about life, which was connected to God. Mm. But and I was just like, oh, hit me in the soul, just hitting me.
Yeah.
And I was like, everything he said, and I just wanted to speak to him after that. So he come down at the end of the service, he was talking at the back. And at this stage, I just got into triathlons. I quit footy then for like 3-4 years, and I just wanted to change. I wanted to get away from it. And I played, and I was just doing triathlons. And I started talking to him. I said, hey, Russ, lovely to meet you. I said, want to get to know you more, but yeah, X, Y, Z. And he was like, oh, what do you do? And I said, I do this. He goes, oh, I cycle. If you ever want to come cycle with me, more than welcome on Saturday morning. So I'd go Saturday morning, cycle with him.
Really?
Grab a coffee, just me and him.
Wow.
And we just used to just talk like this.
Yeah.
Openly. By the highs and lows of life.
Yeah.
And then I just, yeah, started just going, listening to him. I wasn't a believer as such back then. I was just listening to him.
Yeah.
And then not long after, then got, you know, baptized. And then, yeah, I think, you know, it was always been a bit of a battle at the start, though, just to be like that fear of being judged as such, because it was not judged, but like talking about God, because none of my friends were into God, or, you know, people, atheists are out there and they're mock, you know.
Yeah.
And that just comes as you get, you know, more comfortable in yourself and comfortable in what your beliefs are.
Mm.
But, you know, regarding back to, you know, people preaching about, you know, atheists being atheists, or, you know, the devil, or just generally bag-mouthing thing, you know, I think you just got to be true to yourself.
Yeah, man, it's so I didn't come from a religious background. I never went to church when I was young. Mm. Jerome Rapati shared the gospel with me in 2013. Heard the scripture, heard the word, and believed it. Like the conscience, like when you feel the hit, like something in the conscience, where it says in Romans, will divide your thoughts and intentions. And one thing about knowing the Lord is I finally found peace in my life. Like everyone's looking for peace. Everyone's looking for it, but they're looking for it in cars, clothes, holidays,
yeah,
a new job, more money. You know, all those things, they might make you happy for, you know, maybe a couple of days, maybe a couple of months.
Mm.
But still there's that wanting feeling of, I need to fulfill this. But as a footy player, I mean, you know, you're going week to week, game to game. But when I'm knowing Christ, I finally found the peace in my life I was finally looking for.
Mm.
He says, when he leaves at the end of John, he says, the peace I give you, the peace I leave you, it's not what the world can give you. It's the peace I give you. It's so true, bro. It's hard to find peace in this world, peace that is sustaining. But with Christ, I finally found the peace that I was looking for, bro. Because I was looking for it, and, you know, maybe I'll make the Kiwis team. You know, maybe I'll get another contract, bro. You know, then I'll be happy. Then I'll be, you know, then I'll be content. Yeah, maybe come to Salford, you know, da 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 da. And then, nah, man. Like, it's not found in material things, as we were talking about before. Yeah, bro. Yeah, so that's
it's beautiful, man. It's beautiful because I think some people have fear when it comes to that, coming close to the end of their sporting career. What's next? And that limbo crossroads stage of,
yeah,
you walk, when you walk not alone, that journey's a lot easier.
Yeah, definitely. And we always had former players come in and talk something about the Tigers. Really good. They always brought the former players in. So they'll come have lunch on Captain's Run, or they'll just come and speak.
Mm.
Jersey, Prezos. And they'll always talk to the players, da 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 da. And yeah, they always told me that, just make sure that you got something to fall back on, because you don't want to get to the end of your career. And then you're like, oh shit, I hope there's an assistant coach job going, or, you know, you don't want to be in that position. So. Yeah, credit to the Tigers, they did it. They made an effort to always bring their old boys back into the club, bro. That was good. Definitely good.
Mm. You know, I know you might be one of those guys one day preaching, not preaching as such, but just giving these guys, you know, like a bit of support and guidance.
Yeah, I've thought about welfare officer manager for a club in NRL. Bro, that would be a cool job because obviously you get to spend time with the younger players. And every welfare officer I had at an NRL club, they were so good, bro. Mm. Like, they were always there, or that's their job, to make sure your welfare is good. And, then, bro, that's something over here that...
lacking, eh?
Who
is the welfare officer? Do you know? Does each club have one in the Super League? Do you know?
I think they're supposed to. There's rugby league cares in that here, as you can ring them up. But like NRL, like you can go sit in their office and be like, "Oh, this is what I want to do. Can you help me try and do this? Can you help me look for a house?" And they're like, "Yeah, sure, we'll do."
Cool.
Yeah, it's something that, you know, the gap between Super League and NRL. Like, I was telling the Super League boys here, like, this, you know, this is what you get back there, and they were just like, "Wow."
That's true.
Yeah, it's just the gap between those kind of things as well, mental health and
even
retirement account. So like, you get a retirement account in NRL.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're there, but Super League, bro, like,
well, your last day, and then see you later.
Pretty much. Yeah. So.
True.
Yeah, big difference, bro.
Well, man, look, it's been amazing having you on today.
No worries, man.
It's been amazing getting to know you more on a deeper level than just sports. So much more to come from you, brother, in the next couple of years. I'm excited.
Hope so, man. Hopefully, just chipping away at this music thing. And we might stay here long term. I don't know. The visas, though, bro. The visas are out of this world over here.
True. What's the go with your visa, then?
It's a sporting visa, but, bro, they're so expensive. Like,
oh, wow.
Wow. Crazy expensive for my whole family.
Yeah,
but even I thought Commonwealth, New Zealand, hook it up, guys, you know, you're sweet. Nah, not at all. Like, so expensive, bro, just for 1 year visa.
Really?
Yeah, man. It kind of puts you off
wanting
to stay, definitely, because it's so expensive. Price. Yeah.
Yeah.
They come in for free. They get a free hotel, free food, free bank cards, free house. It's just like...
Come on.
It just makes you just go, wow. Yeah.
How many years do you reckon you want to continue for?
What, 40?
Yep.
Probably, next year, and that'll be
cool.
It's more mentally, bro. A bit like Sarge. Like, you come to the point where you're just like, bro, this isn't fun. Like, singing the team song at the end of a game, it's kind of like, doesn't hit the same. Like, It's not what it used to be like.
Yeah.
I think that's just me maturing and getting old, bro. It's just like...
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
The conversations don't hit the same either.
Yeah, 100%, bro.
Yeah, like, that's maybe just as we get older.
Yeah, a bit more wiser.
Younger, you just want to try and tuck up your friend or take the piss
out of each other. Yeah, and probably 2 more years.
Yeah, cool.
Sure.
You're going well at the Fev at the moment, bro.
Thanks, bro.
All the best against Batley tomorrow.
Cheers, lad.
And as we always, how we wrap up over here is just, what are you grateful for?
What am I grateful for? I'm grateful for my family, man. My wife, my kids. Yeah, life wouldn't be the same without them. And just the little things, you know, doing school pickup.
Yeah. Or
having dinner together. At the table as a family.
Beautiful.
Mum and dad, kids. It's a bit of a circus, you know, food flying around everywhere, kids crying, but so grateful for the opportunity. I never got the opportunity when I was young. And just little things like that, bro, so grateful.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much.
Cheers, bro.